Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. The NPR podcast Embedded goes behind the headlines and deep into the story. This time, it's about a high school near Pittsburgh that will shut its doors after 100 years. The school is underperforming, losing students, losing money. What happens to a community when its only high school closes? Do the students end up at a better school? This hour on Point, Embedded at Wilkinsburg High School. You can join us on air or online. Students, parents, we want to hear from you. Have you been through a school closing? What did that do to your kids? What did that do to your community? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from NPR West in Culver City, California, is Shireen Marisol Meraji. She's a reporter for NPR's Code Switch, a team that covers race, ethnicity, and culture. She did the reporting from Wilkinsburg High School for the latest episode of Embedded, which you can link to on our website, onpointradio.org. Shireen, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here.
So let me set this up. Here is NPR's Kelly McGevers at the beginning of the latest episode of the NPR podcast Embedded, which goes inside the closing of Wilkinsburg High School in a low-income neighborhood outside of Pittsburgh.
When No Child Left Behind was passed in the early 2000s, it embraced this idea of school choice. Kids are now able to leave failing public schools to go to charter schools or use vouchers to pay for private schools. A decade later, closing the underperforming schools that remained became a priority for the Obama administration. So now, if the school sucks, just close it. Send the kids to some other school. And here's the thing, though. These school closings are disproportionately affecting poor Black kids. And what's that like if it's your school? Today, we are going to Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, to find out, what do you do when a school that's been part of your town for more than a century is slated to just go away? And when you feel like you don't have a say in that decision, what are you going to do next?
So, Shireen, for this podcast, you were embedded in Wilkinsburg High, academically one of the worst in the state. Tell us about this high school. Why was it slated for closure?
The simple reason is because there just weren't enough kids. There were fewer than 200 middle and high school kids when we were embedded in this school. It used to be a high school that was built to house 1,000 just high school students. And when we were there, it was fewer than 200 middle and high school kids. So there's just not enough children. And not enough children means not enough money for anything, not enough money to run this huge building, which is really old. It's over a century old. Not enough money for honors classes, not enough money for electives. And so the school board made the decision that it didn't make sense to keep the school open.
How did the students make sense of what was going on, of that decision?
I mean, I talked to a lot of kids at the school, and they said various things. I mean, some kids said, this was racism, and the school is closing because we're Black, and you know, and they're just going to ship us off to a bad neighborhood in a different school. Some kids, you know, said, "Oh, we get it. You know, we aren't getting the classes that we need, and we understand why the school is closing, but we don't understand why it got this bad." So, you know, there were a number of different things that kids said. I mean, I heard kids say that they thought they blamed themselves. They felt like it was because they were bad and they were bad students. And, you know, they really took it personally and took it to heart. So,
well, Wilkinsburg was once a middle class community, was well regarded with regard to its public schools. But as you say, enrollment has dropped. I guess families have either moved away, right, or they've transferred their students to private or charter schools. Here's another bit from the podcast. As we learned from Shireen, Wilkinsburg is 30% white, but the white kids don't go to school there.
My name's Tiana Ramsey, and I'm 15.
Take me back to when you first found out that Wilkinsburg High School was closing.
I saw it on a website, the school was closing down, and I'm like, I don't believe that. I don't really believe they're going to close the school down. Where are the kids going to go now, and why are y'all closing the school? But no one could give me an answer for the second question, why are y'all closing it?
Have you pieced together an answer for yourself? Do you think you have an answer?
I think it's because we're African American, we're black, that they're shutting the school down. So, I don't know, because it's always been like this for centuries, actually, before I was even born.
So, what are the options for these kids, Shireen?
Well, the Pittsburgh School District, a school called Westinghouse in a neighboring community called Homewood, that school is taking the students, and they have to go there for the first year, for 1 year. And then, you know, if they want to go to a magnet school or a specialty program after that year and they're still in high school, they can apply to get out of Westinghouse to go to some of these specialty programs. Mm. But they have to go to a school called Westinghouse.
So these students,
that's their option.
Right. There aren't many options is the bottom line.
Right.
So these students are overwhelmingly African-American. Many live in poverty, in violent neighborhoods. Here's Crystal Everett. She's a mother of a junior at Wilkinsburg High. His name is Draymar. She is not happy about the school district's decision to send the kids to Westinghouse. She says a lot of kids left Wilkinsburg to go to charter schools, and with them went the money. This means less money for Wilkinsburg schools and less money, fewer academic resources here. We hear the voice of Embedded producer Chris Benderev in this clip. Here it is.
The school's closing because half the kids go to charter schools because they ain't got enough students in there. That's how I feel like. That's what I feel like. Their parents want them to go to a better school because they don't like Wilkinsburg School or the city schools. Make them pay for their kids to go to a better school district.
Exactly.
I'm just sorry. That's just my point on it. If I felt like I wanted Draymar to go to a better school district, I know I'm going to have to pay for that. That should be in my budget. No Child Left Behind, right? Well, your school's right here. We ain't leaving you behind. Your school's right here. Take these charter schools and combine them into this one big school that has nothing.
Crystal says she's still not sure what she's going to do with Draymar next year. But she says no matter what, she does not want him going to Westinghouse.
He can live with his sister. He can live with his uncle. He can live with his dad.
Do they all live in Pittsburgh?
A few.
My dad lives in...
He's moving to Vegas.
He's moving to Vegas.
Like Las Vegas?
Yes.
Las Vegas. Moving to Las Vegas.
That's my options. I have a few other options. Or I can move.
Just to be clear, she would rather move him to Las Vegas than have him go to Westinghouse.
He can live with his sister, he can live with his uncle, he can live with his dad,
right.
He can live with anyone but me. I don't want him going to that new school.
And, you know, you have to live with a family member in the district if you want to take them out of this merger. So, yeah, that's what a lot of parents were saying to us. Well, we'll have, you know, our child live with a family member in a better district or, you know, we'll move. We'll figure this out some way.
So this school has been in operation, Shireen, for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
What does the end of an era feel like for these kids, for this community?
I talked to alumni who were so sad that this was happening. I mean, I did a tour in the school with somebody who graduated in 1979, and she played on the first girls' basketball team, and she showed me where she had her first kiss and talked about teachers who really changed her life, and she ended up going to college and graduating and being very successful in the television and film industry. And alumni especially just couldn't believe it. They said that they had a great education and don't understand why the school ended up in the position that it was in and ended up closing. And it's a huge building in the center of town, and people are also just wondering what is going to happen to it. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's four stories. It has, you know, these ornate marble staircases, this huge auditorium where the local symphony plays once a year. They do a a benefit show there, a benefit concert there. It's just an incredible building, and people are wondering, I mean, is the school district going to let it decay? Are they going to turn it into live workspace? Is it going to become another school? I mean, no one knows what's going to happen to the building. So the community is also really worried about that, especially because there's a lot of blight in that part of Wilkinsburg, the city center, and they don't want another building to be an empty space where people can sell drugs, or, you know, where you end up finding people dead of an overdose, which happens in a lot of these other abandoned buildings around the city center.
Let me get one last clip in before the break. So the school board in Wilkinsburg made this deal with neighboring Pittsburgh to absorb the students from Wilkinsburg into a high school in a neighborhood called Westinghouse. In the 1990s, Homewood and Wilkinsburg were in a gang war. 18-year-old Marlon Rainey's been going to Wilkinsburg since seventh grade. He said there's been a sense that the two neighborhoods just don't get along.
You know, they always been feuding for a while, so I don't know how it's going to work when we make that merge with each other.
I mean, you're done, right? This is your, well, it's not high stakes for you.
Well, I do have a little brother that go here who's a ninth grader, and I really don't want him going to Westinghouse. I don't know how to put it. Like, Wilkinsburg is not helping my little brother, neither is Westinghouse. Like, my little brother, he just get distracted by, like, the environment that he's in.
14-year-old Journey Ledbetter says the same thing.
We was forced to be in this environment. Your environment has a big part of how you act.
So not only do they have to leave their high school, but they have to go to a place with, let's just say, a history, right?
Yes. Yes, and there is this perception that they will not be welcome there, and it just won't be safe for them. Whether that's just because of what happened in the 90s, and it's stuck with the community, and that's not true, I mean, we don't know. But that's how people feel.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the astonishingly high rates of public school closures throughout this country through the prism of Wilkinsburg High School with Shireen Meraji of NPR's reporting team for the podcast Embedded. You can join the conversation. When a district is losing students and a tax base to sustain a school, what are the options? Has your school taken in students from another district? How's that going? Wilkinsburg has seen brutal street violence in recent months. Here's Shireen on her third morning reporting in Wilkinsburg.
It is 5:28 in the morning. I'm in my hotel room in Pittsburgh, and my phone was just ringing and ringing and ringing. And I missed the call, but I saw that there was a message from my editor, and it said, "Are you okay? I just heard about the shooting." So the next thing I did was go online and type in Wilkinsburg and shooting, and this is what I got.
We have confirmed through Allegheny County Police that there are four women and a man dead in this shooting. Right now, police do not have information as to what brought perhaps two shooters to this location here in Wilkinsburg.
So supposedly two people went to a backyard barbecue, shot up a bunch of people that were in somebody's backyard on Franklin Street in Wilkinsburg. Five people are dead, and at the moment they're saying three people have been injured. And the shooters are at large. And we were supposed to go to the school at 7:30 in the morning for a meeting with the teachers this morning, and I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I'm not sure if Wilkinsburg is locked down and nobody can get in, how they're going to be dealing with the press.
So, Shireen, this is not, unfortunately, not an unusual occurrence in Wilkinsburg. What was it like at school that day?
The interesting thing about that day was, first of all, we didn't know if we were going to get in, and we ended up getting in. And the teachers, the security guards, the principal, really everyone sort of wrapped their arms around the students and acted as grief counselors, acted as a support network for kids who were dealing with this intense tragedy. And one of two students that go to that school had a mom who was killed in that backyard barbecue shooting. So it directly impacted the kids who went to the school. And what we saw were these intangible things, these things that a neighborhood school can do in a community that has nothing to do with, you know, homework and test scores and things like that. They really acted as a surrogate family for these kids and a support network. And we thought that's an important thing to talk about when you talk about a school closure, especially a school closure in a community that is dealing with gang violence and drug violence, that the school is this safe place where the kids have a support system, where in this case, they've known their teachers and security guards, et cetera, since they were in middle school. Mm. So they've really developed these deep bonds. And what happens when the school closes and you no longer have that bond with those people?
Shireen, let me bring another voice into the conversation now. Joining me in the studio is Paul Revel, professor of education policy and administration at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and the director of the Education Redesign Lab at Harvard. He also served as the Massachusetts Secretary of Education from 2008 to 2013. Paul, nice to have you with us. Welcome back.
Glad to be here, Jane.
So give us a sense of how widespread this is. We're hearing about this one school, Wilkinsburg High School. Talk about the rest of the country. How widespread is this?
Well, there is a shift going on, and a lot of schools have been closing, particularly in our urban areas, which are experiencing the challenges of declining enrollment, sometimes competition from charter schools. In other instances, under No Child Left Behind, which is no longer the law of the land, I might add, it's been replaced. Mm-hmm. But under No Child Left Behind, there was some pressure on districts to close schools. So you have seen, particularly in urban settings, a fair number of closings and displacement of students, which is well described in this piece that goes along with that.
So are these mostly financial decisions, would you say?
Well, some of them have been financial decisions, so you have to track that. In a case like this, you had a high school that at the high school level is down to 150 kids, the total school down to about 200 kids. You have 25 mm-hmm. children in a graduating class, and it really that really limits the kinds of opportunities you can provide for children, as well as making it economically inefficient to run a school. So some of them are. A lot of our big cities have declining enrollments in their mainstream systems. Again, sometimes as a result of just changing demographics, people with children moving out of the city. Sometimes the results, we heard some of this in this case, of a white flight or mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. problems related to race and racism in communities. Sometimes related to the competition from charter schools, which are also public schools, but a different kind of public school that in some of our cities is drawing students out of the mainstream system into separate individual schools.
So is there evidence, Paul, that students who have been shuffled from one struggling school to, quote unquote, a better one are actually better off?
Well, in most environments, in most urban environments where you have a lot of underperforming schools, those school closings that were strictly on the basis of school performance, and there have been some of those under No Child Left Behind, states were put under pressure to close schools because of academic performance. And if you didn't have better schools in the district to send children to, there wasn't much evidence that this really improved things. On the other hand, the also mentioned in this story, the competition from charter schools is often competition that is driven by parents and students who are voting with their feet and saying, mm-hmm. We're not getting the service we want to get from this mainstream high school. We think we can be better served elsewhere. So you have to distinguish when students are actually being shuffled, that is pushed from mm-hmm. out of one school into another, and when students are and their families are voting with their feet.
Mm. Federal law about accountability and underperforming schools actually changed
with
the recent passage of the Every Student Succeeds Act that replaced No Child Left Behind.
That's right.
And this new law leaves matters mostly up to the states.
Yeah, it leaves these kinds of matters. In other words, first of all, how you determine what a chronically underperforming school is and whether it's just on the basis of test scores or whether you add some other factors, that is now left up to the states to make that determination. And then what you do in intervening in the lowest 5%, which this school would have been in Pennsylvania, the lowest performing 5% of schools, is up to the states to determine. So there aren't the forced closures that exist before. But that's only part of the problem, as I say.
And so what are the school district's options when their school is given, you know, such a failing grade?
Well, now states will have to determine what to do about it. In the case of charter schools, for example, in many of our states, we have policies that force us to close chronically underperforming charter schools. So that's a policy option that you have. On the other hand, if you don't have better schools for students to go to, you have to look at something else. The issue of declining enrollment is a tough issue that a lot of cities have to deal with. They have more physical plant by far than they have need for, given the enrollment of students, and the closures have to come somewhere. Some districts decide, well, we'll just close the oldest buildings. Others decide, well, we'll close the least chosen schools, the ones that parents choose least often. Others decide that we're going to close the underperforming schools. Mm-hmm. But they have to close some of the physical plant, and you always get this feeling that was well described in this story of displacement, of losing an institution in that community to which you were attached, whether it was high performing or low performing. So these are real challenges.
A lot of good callers, listeners want to get in here. Let's go to Kima in Hampton, Virginia. Kima, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello, Jane. Yes, sir. As someone who went to a public school for a little bit before my parents pulled me out of the school system, and by the way, as an African American, I have an issue with the way some experts like you, I have much respect for you, Professor, present this. I mean, these public schools are genuinely failing, and these charter schools are providing an opportunity for us because, as you know, education is a key success in the 21st century. Why should we be the victims of these failing public schools while these charter schools are offering viable options for education? I mean, yes, there is some displacement, but the little bit of displacement is worth the academic success of the future.
Well, Kima, thanks.
Maybe I didn't articulate my point as clearly as I should have. I was saying that the charter schools present a real viable option and in many cases a higher performing option for parents, and they are a public school system, so parents should have the right to choose them. In fact, that's the reason in public policy they were created. Now, not all charter schools are superior to the schools in the mainstream district, but at least parents have choices where they didn't have choices before.
Shireen, how did you see that in Wilkinsburg? Did a lot of the kids who were being shuffled to the next school, did they want to go to a charter school? Did they want to have another option?
Uh-huh. Yes, they did. And a lot of the parents said, hey, we are not going to send our kids to Westinghouse. We are going to look for a charter school that will take them. And if that means sending my child to live with their uncle or aunt in a different district, we will do that so that we can get into the charter school that will best educate our child. So that was an option for them, and they were willing. Well, you know, I mean, they would have to jump through some hoops to do it, but the parents that I spoke to said that they were willing to do that. And this story isn't a charter versus public school story. This mm-hmm. is a story about what happens when the kids and teachers and staff members are left in a public school that's closing. What does that look like?
Paul?
But there is a public policy question here. When we have a mainstream school system and then we create charter options next to it, that when parents choose the charters, it's going to mean declining enrollment in the mainstream system, and then policymakers, school board members, superintendents are going to have to make decisions about what to do with that excess space.
Let's get Rosie in here, a listener from Miami. Rosie, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi.
I would like to join in the program, and I thank all of the callers that also called in. I'm from Miami, and I wanted to touch base on a particular issue. Many times parents move their kids from a public school to a charter school because the public school is not offering, as you were many before saying, mm-hmm. what the kids need. Now, there's enough kids for all schools. There shouldn't be any school having to decline in enrollment when the school is giving what it needs to give. This is all about money, okay? There's no need to have in a kindergarten class 33 kids, and when they're so little. Example, in my case, when I took my son out of the public school at the age of 5 years old, he had been in a pre-K program prior in that same school, mm-hmm. was because the best they could offer me at the time was 36 kids in a kindergarten class. Well, that does not fly
mm-hmm.
In my case, in that situation. So my son actually went to a charter school, and I had him there till third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And the third grade, I then put him back in the public school system because he had received more one-to-one at the time. Now I'll go into higher grades.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason why a public school has to be failing. The district needs to do what they need to do. And what they're doing is wrong.
Ruzi, I hear you. It's not that easy, though, I guess you would say, Paul Rebel. Does it push back?
Well, I think the caller makes some good points. Obviously, class size at the ratio she's talking about are too high. And the reason that we have things like charter schools are to offer alternatives to parents who seek something other than what the mainstream system is doing. An important point to make here is charter schools are public schools. They are funded with public money and they are publicly accountable. So it isn't a question of private schools versus public schools. There are two different kinds of public schools. And there isn't actually enough money to go around. You can't continue to run the mainstream public school at the same level with the same courses and options and programs that you did before if you have large numbers of students leaving that system to go into a charter school. So there have to be some adjustments as people make choices. But the whole idea behind charter schools was to give parents, particularly parents trapped in inner city situations where they had very few choices, the real opportunity to make some choices for their children, which the caller obviously has made.
Speaking of kids trapped in inner city circumstances, let's get back to the podcast here, NPR's new podcast, Embedded. Here we are in the halls of Wilkinsburg High School on the day of the shooting that we heard about earlier. The student Draymar and some other kids learn that their friend's mother has been killed in that shooting. Embedded producer Chris Benderev captured this particular moment.
You say what?
You're lying.
She died.
The names of the victims are not public yet, but rumors are getting out. Tanea's mom was a popular football team mom. She had two kids at the school.
Damn. I feel so bad for them, yo. Because boys, their pops is in jail and then their mom died.
The dad is in prison. One girl asks, so who are the kids going to live with now? Draymar is definitely surprised by all this, but honestly, he doesn't seem that rattled.
Yo! Matt!
He says he has to go to class, and then he walks off down the hall. But then I see Draymar run into this other kid, another football player. They say something to each other, and then all of a sudden, the other kid needs to sit down. Then Draymar, too, right there on the floor.
He's got his hands on his head. He looks pretty upset.
They don't say anything to each other while they sit there. And then a few seconds later, a security guard named Chris Taylor walks up.
Chris Taylor just came up. He's going to walk him away.
He doesn't say anything either. He just stands them up, puts his arms around them, and walks them back into an office. He motions that I should stay back. Eventually, that security guard, Chris, walks back out of that office. His eyes are a little misty.
You know, you can say what you want to say about Wilkinsburg High School, but this is the time that you really need to see how, as a staff, we get together, all of us, security, lunch ladies, maintenance, counselors, principals, teachers, and now you really get the chance to see and react to how we really are these kids, you know, family to a certain extent.
Shireen, this is an incredible look into the lives of kids who really have bigger issues to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think I said this before the break, but the reason why we included the day of the shooting, and we went back and forth about this, was because it really did show the role that this school plays in the neighborhood as a safe place, a place where the kids, a number of kids said, we know there's no guns coming in here. We feel safe here. We can talk to our teachers. We can talk to our security guards like Draymar in this case. And speaking of Draymar, his mother told me, Crystal, one of the reasons why she sent him to Wilkinsburg High School was because it was right down the street from her house and everybody in the community knows her son. So if he was skipping class, for example, and she works in downtown Pittsburgh, she would get a text that said, hey, I saw Draymar, you know, he was skipping school. And it's not the safest community. So she knows where her son is because he goes to that neighborhood school and everyone around there knows him. And that makes her feel safe. Mm. So what happens when she doesn't have that anymore?
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, From the latest in emerging markets to finding the next big computing platform, tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, or listen at gs.com/podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour about the huge number of public schools that have closed in this country and why it's happening now. You can join the conversation. Do you live in a district with failing schools? Are your kids stuck in one? Did you find a workaround? Shireen Meraji of the reporting team for NPR's podcast Embedded joins us. She spent weeks reporting from inside Wilkinsburg High School, a public school just outside of Pittsburgh, as it was closing its doors after 100 years in operation. Also with me in the studio, Paul Revel. He's professor of educational policy at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. I want to hear from Wilkinsburg English teacher Carrie Boyer here. She says she's with the kids at this high school from the first bell to the final bell on most days. There's never a free period, and it's been like that for her during her 17 years of teaching.
I started here when I was 25 years old. The one thing I've always liked about here is I had these kids in eighth grade, and I got to watch them grow until they graduated. And some of them are now 30 years old, but I still talk to them, and they're still my kids. They can be 50 years old, and they'll still be one of my kids. And my husband gets so mad at me all the time. He's like, can you just leave it there one time? And I'm like, I can't.
You know, Ms. Boyer has two kids of her own. She's got bills to pay, mouths to feed. But she turned down a job at Westinghouse because she'd have to leave before Wilkinsburg's last graduation. And she says she just couldn't do it.
My heart's here. So why am I going to pick up and leave them without a teacher for 3 months? So I'll be waving the white flag at the last day of school, I guess. I'm going down with the ship.
Well, she did go down with the ship. She decided to ride out her school year to the end instead of taking off early for another job elsewhere. She's left some things up on the walls. Here she is in another clip.
I don't know. I figured if I was going to end up somewhere new, I wanted to start fresh. So I left a lot of it here.
The final English assignments on the chalkboard. The kids had to write their autobiographies. Some motivational posters are still up. 7 rules of life, that kind of thing.
They always got a kick out of the Garfield one. It says, you can't scare me, I teach. And I always wanted to put in Wilkinsburg underneath that. You know, you always pack up certain things and take them home because you don't want anything to happen to them over the summer. But knowing that this time I was packing them up and there wasn't going to be a return in the fall was hard.
Shireen, there she is, Carrie Boyer, deciding to stick with those kids through the end of the school year. But not all the teachers decided to do that. Talk about teacher and principal turnover at this school.
Well, there were 6 teachers that left for new jobs. And you know, Ms. Boyer, because she decided to stick out the year, doesn't have a job lined up. So she's really worried about that. Other teachers decided, you know, hey, we got to take the opportunity that's presented to us. And they left and took those jobs. And then there were 3 principals that year, this final year. And there were, I believe there were 4 superintendents, too. There was a huge superintendent turnover in the district, too, while we were reporting this story.
So, Paul Revel, how do you make sure kids in poor schools, in violent neighborhoods, get a good education?
Well, there's so many things going on, Jane, and well described again in this piece. I mean, you're dealing with concentrated poverty. You're dealing with chronic underperformance of a school district. You're dealing with a school district actually that has a high per pupil expenditure. There was an expenditure of about $21,000 a student, which many districts in the country, including suburban ones, would envy. So there were other things at work and going on here. I think, though, what's most apparent from this story is how different the life circumstances are for children who grow up in this sort of a situation by comparison with their more privileged peers who live elsewhere. So I think we need an education system that takes into account where children are and meets them where they are and gives them what they need. And what these children need is a customized kind of education that gives them the support inside and outside of school the health and human services, the learning opportunities outside of school, summer, after school, things of this nature. They need stability in schools, schools that have an adequate number of programs, that have faculties full of people like Mrs. Bowen, who we heard from mm-hmm. earlier, mm-hmm. people who really care about them. They're going to need more time in school and on learning enrichment than is typical in a suburban school because there's less to go home to in terms of the resources that are available in the neighborhood. It's going to take a comprehensive approach, and it's going to take the recognition that one size doesn't fit all in American public education.
Well, don't we have to be honest here too, Paul, that these closings disproportionately affect students of color? I mean, I read a Time magazine piece that talked about Chicago schools that have been closed in the last few years. 90% of students displaced in 72 schools in Chicago since 2001 were Black.
That's right. No, I mean, a lot of this happens in areas. I mean, right now we have an iron law. It's not just about race. Race is correlated, but we have an iron law correlation between educational achievement and attainment and socioeconomic status, which basically says that, how well you do in American public education is largely determined by where you come from. Not for any individual, but when you look at the statistics overall, that's what's going on. So it really isn't surprising in that sense that the most disrupted environments are our urban environments for the most part, because that's where we have the highest concentrated poverty. And we haven't come up with an adequate solution in U.S. public education to address that. We need to think much more deeply about that, among other reasons, because the U.S. public school population is now just crept over 50% low-income students and more than 50% students of color, two groups with which we've failed dismally in the past to prepare everyone for success. Now we need to get it right urgently.
So many great callers here. Let's get Nicole in here from Louisiana. Nicole, welcome to the program. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Jane. Yes, I am a teacher in the New Orleans metropolitan area, and I deal with these factors that you all are talking about every day on a daily basis, all day, and it is draining physically and mentally draining for me as a person, a mother, and a teacher. But I would like to touch on some of the points that you all have said. I don't think that we in the United States, in American public school education, stress these issues enough. One of the things is schools, from my viewpoint, from what I've seen, are low performing because of the socioeconomic socioeconomics that are involved in mm-hmm. the students' lives. And these affect the students in so many ways, and one of those ways is behavior. They're not coming to school interested with an interest in education, ready to learn. And they come to school acting out.
You're a teacher on the front lines, Nicole, and you've seen it, and we're so glad that you called about that. It's an excellent point. Thanks so much, Nicole. Let's get Dan in here from New Orleans, Louisiana. Again, Dan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. How you doing?
Fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
I just want to make a comment. I'd actually experienced going to a wealthier school, and then towards the end of my high school career, I ended up graduating from school. I ended up becoming a charter school, and I just feel like I needed to comment on it because, I mean, I just noticed a huge difference in myself, just like firsthand experience on going to a lower income school with basically no opportunities versus going to, a school in a wealthier school system before that.
And what was the biggest difference, Dan? What would you say was the biggest difference?
I guess, just all the opportunities, programs, AP classes, the class that they actually offer, like college prep class, just different programs to get college credits and get you prepared mm-hmm. for college. Mm-hmm. And just all this, all this different money. I mean, money almost equals education, it seems like, because they're able to invest in the students, invest in teachers, invest in programs.
Dan, thank you. But money isn't always the answer, Paul.
Well, money isn't everything, as we see in this case, because the district was actually getting a fair amount of money for each student. But what you talk about in terms of the range of programs available to students, that's certainly a factor. And you can't offer much in the way of programs in a high school where you have less than 200 students, 25 students a class. It just doesn't give you many options. So this is where the dilemma lies, is you've got to have a critical mass of students in order to offer adequate programs. And you need adequate funding. And a lot of our urban schools, a lot of our schools that serve economically disadvantaged youngsters are underfunded by comparison with other schools. This case is sort of different in that way.
So let's hear more from this terrific new podcast from NPR called Embedded. We're hearing about these kids in Wilkinsburg, from Wilkinsburg High. They're going to this new school called Westinghouse. Shireen here, you're going for a tour of the new school, Westinghouse, and you find that some of the kids think it doesn't seem so bad.
This is the culinary arts room. We have cooking class here. Can we go and see?
Mr. Vishner, the culinary arts teacher, invites us in. Inside, a high schooler named Otis walks by with a huge metal bowl full of freshly cooked French fries.
Yeah, so it's a three-year program where students get everything they need to know how to be an entry-level cook or chef when they go into the business.
Perfectly salted and very crispy.
Thank you.
Way to go, Otis.
Really good.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vishner.
Of course.
And down the hall, there's more vocational training.
When you get in high school, you can apply for, like, what you want to do, like nursing, cosmetology, construction.
Oh, that's carpentry.
Let's go in.
You can just go in.
And we finish our tour at the library, where there are lots of brand new Apple computers.
So, Shireen, what were the kids' response
to
that?
Before the joke.
Yeah. Uh-oh, what was the joke?
Sorry. No, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It was about dissecting regurgitation. At Alp. Anyway, it was
important for high schoolers, right?
Yes, quite.
So, but what was the reaction to the new school then, Shireen?
Well, those were the kids at the new school who were giving me a tour, and for me, the reaction was, wow, this school looks pretty nice. The facilities are up to date, unlike Wilkinsburg. I mean, Wilkinsburg has a gym they have two gyms in the school, and one of them is just completely water damaged and no one's allowed in there. They have a whole second floor that's cordoned off. But this school, everything looks new. It's clean. They have vocational training for the kids. They have AP courses. They have, you know, an indoor pool and lots of activities. So for us, it was like, okay, you know, these opportunities that the kids aren't getting at Wilkinsburg, they will get some of these opportunities at Westinghouse. Mm-hmm. And the kids who did end up going to Westinghouse for tours from Wilkinsburg, I think some of them came away with that feeling later on in the year that, well, at least, you know, they have things that we don't have.
So, Paul Revel, is that typical? Schools seem to be better than the ones they replaced?
Not necessarily. I mean, when we've had school closings based on performance alone, sometimes it is, a dance of the lemons. You're just moving from one negative school to another situation.
And I just say, I'm sorry, Paul, I just want to interrupt. When we talk about performance and when we're talking about academic performance, Westinghouse actually has ranked a couple points lower than Wilkinsburg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I saw that.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but on the other hand, they do have more program offerings. But I return to the earlier point I made, which is schools alone, as currently constituted in the K-12 sphere, that actually take up only 20% of a child's waking hours during kindergarten, between kindergarten and age 12, are just on average not strong enough to, on a regular basis at scale, move kids from backgrounds of poverty to achieving success in college and career. So we need a stronger approach. We need early childhood education. We need more programs and supports to help students deal with the issues that get in the way of their coming to school or being successful when they get there. Mm-hmm. We need more out-of-school enrichment opportunities. We need an education that meets them where they are and gives them what they need.
Let's get Bruno in here in St. Louis, Missouri. Bruno, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I taught in inner city St. Louis, and I've been an educator for 20 years or so. And some of the best successes I've seen, unfortunately, are when kids simply move away from those failing schools. Once they move away to other districts, small rural districts, I see them change. We had a gangbanger named Jason from Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
and he moved to my smaller rural school, and for the first 3 months, it was very difficult, but once the relationship was built, he became one of my best students, and he'll be a lifelong friend. Mm-hmm. So it's sad to say, but I think we need to close these schools and have the kids move on and move away.
All right, Bruno, thank you. Thanks very much. Let's get this in here, the sound from graduation day. Just a few weeks ago here, the very last Wilkinsburg High School graduation held in the auditorium. 25 students are on the stage there. Graduating senior Anfernee Fleming gets up to the microphone.
And I got one more thing to say. Miss Boyer,
Can you please stand up?
Ms. Boyer comes from the side of the stage toward Anfernee, crying. People in the audience are crying. Shoot, I'm tearing up.
She gives Anfernee a huge hug.
I'm so proud of you.
This lady right here put the whole senior class, pushed us to make sure that we graduate and didn't play around school. If it wasn't for her, I don't even know where half of us would be at right now. Because this lady right here, the best lady I ever met. And I'm going to miss her. I'm going to stay in contact with you forever, babe. Love you.
Shireen, I'm curious what your takeaway was after being embedded in Wilkinsburg for this series.
It's so complicated. That was my takeaway. It's just, I mean, there is no way to wrap this up with a bow and say, well, this is better for the kids or this is not better for the kids. It's just very, very complicated. I met amazing young people like Anfernee who are, you know, he's graduating. He's going off to community college and, you know, he says he wants to go to an art school if he can. And Ms. Boyer, incredible teacher. But, you know, the limited research that's out there says that if you send a kid to another, quote unquote, a school that's not performing better academically, one of the top schools, that it's not really better for the kids. And so I just, even though this school has better facilities and a really strong leader, I don't know how this will work out for the kids. And I hate to say time will tell, but time will tell. And I would love to check in.
Well, we hope you will. Paul Revel, give us your final thoughts here. What should we know about this that we haven't heard?
Well, a couple of quick things. I mean, that last cut from the show talks about the importance of relationships. Every kid needs strong, powerful relationships with teachers like that. Overall, I think we're going to have to step back. We have to look at concentrated poverty, as one of the callers suggested. Sometimes integrating, moving kids out of that environment into another situation geographically is helpful. But I think the reality is, in our urban school systems, we've got to think bolder and broader than we have thus far about what kids need and figure out how to get it to them, even if it's different for some kids than for others.
Paul Revel, former Massachusetts Secretary of Education, Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Paul, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure, Jane.
And Shireen Marisol Meraji, reporter for NPR's terrific new Embedded podcast. Really appreciate your good work, Shireen. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
And thank you, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.